Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Okay, we're continuing to discuss how the phonemes, the aksharas that make up letters, come from the more subtle manifestations of sound, beginning with the primeval nada. This is also discussed in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, chapter 6. And Kavi Karnapur cites a few of these verses. One of them is, Samahitatmano Brahman Brahmanak Parameshtinaha Vidyakashara Budnado Vidirodad Vibhavyate. Now this is discussing how Lord Brahma manifests the Omkara. Brahmanak Parameshti. Parameshtinaha. Lord Brahma sitting on his highest seat, his lotus seat. O Brahmana. This is Suta Goswami speaking to Sharanika and the others. And Brahma was samahitatmano. He was fixed in meditation. In his meditation, from out of the sky of his heart, appeared the nada. Okay, nada is eternal, but it did appear at the beginning of creation out of Brahma's heart. It manifested. Viti rodhad vibhavyate. When you stop the activities of the sense of hearing, then you're supposed to be able to hear the nada. When you're not listening to anything else. The horns and the birds and the kids screaming and the firecrackers, when it all stops, you can hear nada. And maybe you can chant Hare Krishna with some attention. So, and then it continues. After that, after the appearance of nada, Tato bhut trivid omkaro yovyakta prabhavak swarat. Beginning with that, then the statement, Tatokshara samamnayam asvijad bhagavana jaha. So Lord Brahma, the three phonemes of the omkar appeared, which is the unmanifested source of the creation of everything. And it's independent. And subsequent to that, Lord Brahma produced the alphabet, the collection of phonemes. Akshara Samamnaya. Samamnaya means it's actually in a particular order. They were created in that order. It's not an arbitrary order. So nada is eternal. Therefore, omkara, because omkara is a product of nada, it's an emanation of nada, omkara should be eternal too. And the varnas, all of them, they're also further emanations from omkara. So they should also be eternal. The actual quality of an eternal thing, or the proper quality, not an accidental quality. I may have a hat on my head or a stick in my hand, but they're not essential qualities. That my possessing a hat or a stick is temporary. But what I actually innately possess, if I'm eternal, that should also be eternal. The innate or natural quality of a thing should be, if the thing is eternal, the quality should be eternal. Someone may counter argue, well, doesn't the spirit soul experience the qualities of, doesn't he have the qualities of desire and hate, anger? These they're not permanent, but they're his qualities. And the answer is that they're not properly his qualities, they're the qualities of the mind and false ego. This anger, hate, aversion, attraction. They are temporary, but they don't belong properly to the soul. The qualities that properly belong to this eternal soul should be eternal. And similarly, the phonemes, which are expansions of the primeval sound, eternal sound, should also are also eternal. So the sound that is coming out of our mouth, impelled by the air, this is simply manifesting, or sometimes not manifesting, the eternal phonemes. The phonemes become manifested in the physical sound, and sometimes they're not manifest, but they're eternal. Actually, this is what the philosophers call spota. We were studying spotavad. Well, here we get another dose of spotavad, the way Kami Karnapur wants to explain it. But he's distinguishing this as internal spota. It's a manifestation of sound within the heart, because the phonemes manifest in the intelligence before they manifest on the outside. So they manifest in the form of antaraspota, internal, you know, spota. And actually there's reference to that with the word spota in the 12th canto, 6th chapter. Shrinoti cha imam spotam, in Sutta Goswami's own words. So therefore, there are many acharyas, authorities, who call the meaning, the mental understanding, the meaning of words, they call it antaraspota, the internal spota. Or they also call it Shabda Brahma. Not Shabda Brahma in the sense of the Vedas, but more broadly, sound as a manifestation of the Absolute. For example, the Vakyapadiya was written by Bhartrihari, which is the original presentation of the Spotavad. He's the grammarian who presented this linguistic theory that there is a special energy that words in a sentence contain that's apart from the meanings of the individual components of the word and of the sentence. So that's Spotavad, and Spotavad was first conceived of and presented elaborately by Bhartrihari. He's the authority. There's a commentary by Punyaraja on Bhartrihari's Vakyapadiya, which is the standard textbook that sets forth the theory of Spotavad. And in the commentary to that, Punyaraja says, Niramsha ev abhinho nityo bodha swabhavam shabd artam ayam antarak spota. This is what we call antara spota, internal spota. It has no parts. It's not separated. No distinctions. It's eternal consciousness, eternal awareness. So the linguistic monists of the grammatical school, not the Paninian grammarians, but the schools founded by Bhartrihari, the grammatical philosophers, the linguistic analysts of the Spotavad, they say that Spota is indivisible. Just like time doesn't really have divisions. We make up, we imagine divisions of time. You know, the time it takes for the water to fill up, you know, the jar, we say is the division of time. The time it takes the sun to move around. But actually, time itself is eternal and undivided. Same thing with spota. The actual meaning of language doesn't really divide up. It's not really made out of sentences and words even. Those are fictions. Just like all duality is illusory. So these are like linguistic Mayavadis. They say that the language actually doesn't have divisions. It's just illusory. Words and phonemes are actually just a useful illusion. Anyway, so the real speech, which has no parts, the real language is antaraspota, internal spota. And it manifests in sound as bahir spota, external language, external spota. Okay, is there any evidence of this antaraspota, that, you know, scientific evidence for it in the real world? Yes, we can find something that serves as such evidence in the Yoga Vashishta Ramayana. in the Nirvana Kanda, chapter 2. There's a statement. Jatanda muka bharirasyantak swiya paramishi swavak shabdarta yur bodha antaraspota evasa. If you take a person who from his very birth has been blind, deaf, and dumb, can't see, can't hear, and he can't talk, okay, still he has language. In his mind, he's still thinking in language. Well, at least we're presuming that. In his internal pondering within himself, he's actually understanding, in some way, the meaning of words, the sound of words and their meaning. I don't know what language he's talking to himself, because he's never heard it, any other language, any human language. But it says here he's talking to himself inside his mind. It's, you know, with some kind of words, and they have meaning. That is what you call antaraspota, the internal form of language. I don't know if we have proof that such that a deaf, dumb, blind man actually does have a language inside. I don't know. Probably yes. There probably is proof of that. Yes. Yes, ma'am. But he doesn't have any eyes. He's blind.
Blind.
Oh, he's blind, deaf, and dumb. Maybe someone could, he could read Braille with his fingers, but how would he interpret it? Yes? Accepted by Mayavadis. I'm not sure the status. That other Ramayana, which was it? Adhyatma, no, the Yoga Vishishta Ramayana was being studied by Murari Gupta, right? It's Advaita Acharya, and Lord Chaitanya chastised him because it's a Mayavadi book. Yes, we have it upstairs. No table of contents, though. Yes? Yes. Yes, so if you'd like to do the same thing, you can go upstairs and read it and give a class on it. Not me. Lord Chaitanya will come. Okay. Now, the grammarians, they talk about external spota. That's how... Okay, it's nice talking theoretically about the nada and the omkar and everything. It's real spiritual. But we want to get down to nitty-gritty practical things like how to analyze grammar. So we have to translate the internal spota into external spota. That is how the eternal sound, the eternal language, which is undivided, how it seems by illusion to divide up into words, and words are divided up into phonemes. That's what we study in grammar, is this illusion of words and phonemes. So grammarians have to deal with the illusion. So this is what actually Bhattrahari, most of his book is about. It's about the external manifestation of spota. So the way they explain it, beginning with Bhattrahari, the Spotavadis, is that we've been through this before in the Tattvasandarbha, in the Sarvasambhadini. So these phonemes, when you hear them, you hear sounds one after another. Now, of course, a phoneme also could be considered complex. You know, when you see a scientific diagram of what the sound is produced, it may involve several steps to produce one phoneme. But we don't pay attention to those divisions of phonemes. You know, like tuts, you know, is a phoneme in Russian, right? What do you call it? Tsa. So it's actually, it's a stop plus a sibilant. It actually has two components, but it's only thought of, the Russian mind only recognizes it as one phoneme. Yes. So we're not going to be concerned about the divisions of phonemes, even though they might be there. What is relevant for language is just the phoneme. It doesn't, you know, we don't make use of the parts of the phonemes. You hear one phoneme after another. Okay, any disagreement with that? Anybody who doubts that You hear, you know, when you're listening to speech, you hear one sound after another. And the sounds you're hearing are phonemes. If they're not phonemes, if you're listening to the birds chirping, you know, and maybe they have some phonemes among themselves, but we can't recognize them. So for us, it's not language. It's just noise. But language, what you're hearing, should be phonemes. If you know the language, you should recognize the phonemes. And you're hearing one after another. So the Spotavad goes like this, or the definition of Spota. You hear one sound after another. Of course, the sounds disappear practically as soon as they appear. That's the nature of sound in the sky. It dissipates very fast. The sound isn't there again. 1 second later, if it was, just like if 10 people are speaking at once, you can't make out anything. 10 people say, you know, each come to you and they all tell you something at the same time, you won't understand any of it. So similarly, if there were 10 phonemes in a word and you heard all of them at once, then it would be chaos. So actually what happens is you hear one phoneme and by the time the person speaks the second phoneme, the first phoneme has disappeared already. Before this next phoneme comes, the previous phoneme is already gone. And so there's no overlapping and there's no chaos. So you hear one phoneme after another and they disappear practically as soon as they come. And all that's left in your mind is some sort of impression, a samskara. But those samskaras from each of the phonemes is there in your mind. And when you get to the last samskara, there's something in there. There's a potency called the spota. That it belongs to the word, it's created by the word, and the word can start manifesting itself as soon as you get to the last phoneme. Because if you don't, then it might be a different word. You don't know which phoneme it's going to be until you hear it. So you can't reckon. There's no possibility. Well, there is a. You can guess at a word, but you can't be sure which word it is until you get to the last phoneme. And that potency that's contained in the word and is revealed when you hear the last phoneme is a potency to make you understand the meaning of the word. That's the spota. That's called padaspota. It's the spota power that's contained in a word. And similarly, you repeat several words to make up a sentence, one word after another. A normal human being can only pronounce one word at a time. You know, if you have several people, okay. If you had a person with two mouths, he could speak two words at a time. But normal people only speak one word at a time. So you hear one word, then another, then another, then another. And the same way as with the phonemes making up the word, each word comes and goes, is gone before the next word comes, but it leaves an impression in your mind. And all those impressions are there. When you get to the last word, there's that spota that belongs to the whole sentence. It pops. That's, pop goes the weasel, you know the song? Anyway, Jack in the Box? So a little puppet inside a box with a spring and you turn the thing and then he pops up. That's spota. Spota is like a little pop or explosion. So the spota pops out when you get to the last word of the sentence and it reveals the meaning of the sentence. It's not just that the words, the Spotavadis deny that the words in themselves have that potency to combine together, by perfect, socialistic cooperation. They get together and make the meaning. They can't do it. There has to be this separate potency, the Spota, that does that has and reveals the meaning of the sentence. And anyway, that's called Vakya Spota. And Shabda Brahma, the absolute truth, manifests itself in these two forms externally, as Padaspota and Vakyaspota. Do we have any questions? Yes.
There is a spota for a word and then a spota for a sentence, is it so?
Yes.
And then sentences might group together and is there a spota for a whole paragraph?
I don't think so. There may be some mention of such a thing, but it's not really required because once you get a whole sentence, then you just have to use your intelligence how to fit the sentences to get how one sentence leads to another. But The theory is that you cannot even understand a sentence just by understanding the words.
Because, as you said, if one word is, that cannot give the exact whole meaning, we combine all the words together and that will produce a spota to give the meaning of the entire sentence. The same argument.
No. That's not the way they say it. You don't produce a spota by putting the words together.
No, that's the, I'm saying a sentence spota. A spota for a line is produced by...
Vakya spota, you mean?
Yeah.
No, but they don't say that you create the spota. The spota is resides eternally in the sentence. You know, it's an eternal entity. You don't make spotas, you don't create them. And certainly you don't create them by putting the words together. It's something that belongs to the sentence, not to the words. It's just, it's revealed when you hear all the words. You know, the cue for the man to jump out of the box is to get to the last word. It's like you're performing a play and you're supposed to jump on the stage with a sword and attack somebody. And, you know, there's a line. When you hear that line, you know it's time to jump on the stage. You're not listening to the rest of it. You've heard this play 1,000 times. Every night you're doing it. But you're waiting for your line. As soon as you hear your line, you jump on the stage. Like that. It's just a cue for the spota to pop out when you hear the last word. But the words don't make the spota. That's the theory. We don't necessarily ascribe to that theory, but that's their theory. Yes?
For example, if we have a complicated sentence which contains many clauses, so in this case, Vakya Spota, it belongs only to simplest Vakya, simplest sentence. Is it so?
I don't know what they say about complex sentences and compound sentences, whether each part is considered a sentence, and you just add sentences together. I don't know. I've only read a little bit of the Spotavad, and I didn't read any of Bhakyapadiya. I read some of the later books, parts of them. So I don't know how they deal with that question.
And also, I listened to one seminar by Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, and he spoke about different levels of sound, and he told that there is some particular level which is beyond this physical sound, on which people can communicate. For example, demigods, they can communicate on the level of more subtle sound. So
yes.
Is it the same as the level of spota? For example, this energy, this idea which we want to convey, in just we somehow empower another person to be able to recognize it. Without manifesting physical sound.
I don't know. Spota is a potency. You know, so... It's not that there's a separate spota level. That spota potency may manifest in a special way among yogis or among demigods, and they don't have to open their mouths like we do and bother to breathe and do all these other things. Yeah, I mean, you can have telepathy or something, in which spota manifests in some other way. But I'm not sure how it works.
So it's like some potency, and it may manifest on the level of physical sound, then on the level of some more subtle sound,
possibly.
And then more subtle sound.
Possibly,
like
but yeah. I don't know where that's discussed, if anywhere.
Like the level of Pashyansi, Madhyama.
But that's not Spotavad. Yeah, that's Shankaracharya, but he's not dealing with this Spota theory. He's talking about how sound manifests on different levels, yes. And we agree with that, of course. But that doesn't have to be connected with Spotavad. I mean, we may not accept Spotavad in the first place.
But
it's controversial.
How does it manifest? For example, we want to say something. So
I don't know.
And this has been that we create in our mind or our heart some spota or some minion.
No, you don't create spota. Nobody, spotas are not created. If we're going to talk about spotas, let's use the definition. It's an eternal entity. What do you mean then?
I mean, we can understand spota when somebody is recognizing. For example, somebody is speaking already, and on the level of how we can recognize the spota, but from the point of view of one who is speaking, how does this spota transfers from his heart or his desires into manifest sounds, vice versa. I mean, vice versa.
No, I don't know. I don't know how that. What you're asking me as a representative of the Spotavad, I don't think they answer that question. How Spota manifests itself to someone's heart? It just is a potency. I don't think they can explain how it works.
Not only in the heart, but in the words of one who is speaking. For example, I have some idea and I want to...
No, but when you hear words, yeah. I know, but I think this is getting off the topic. I know it's you know, you want to know how this works, but I don't think they have an answer to it, and I don't think we're going to reconstruct their theory for them and make it work. I mean, there's something lacking in their theory that they can't really explain what this spota really is and what it does. How does it actually work? They don't have an answer for it. I don't think we should be spending our time trying to come up with an answer for them. We're going to reject their theory anyway. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the way it works is spota is in the sentence itself. Of course, sentences are conveyed or communicated by one person speaking a sentence, mm-hmm. vibrating it, and someone else hearing it. Mm-hmm. So of course, the spota will be carried, will be received in the hearing. And it will do its work, you know. It's contained in the sentence that you speak, contained in the sentence before you speak it. It's still in the sentence when you speak it, and the same spota is still there when the person receives it by hearing. Now you're asking, how does it work, you know, on those different levels? I don't know, and I don't think they know. I don't think the proponents of this theory can answer that clearly. You know, they're just saying it's there. It's a mysterious thing. And it does its job, but I don't think they have a proper explanation how it does its job, especially on these different levels. Okay? Yeah. All right. Anyway, the same Punyaraja who was commenting on the Vakyapadiya of Bhartahari, he formulates it in his words about what the external spota is. Because we read his definition of the internal spota. Now he's describing the external spota, the actual sentences and the components. Eka eva nityat padabi vyangyo akando vyakti spoto jati spoto bahi rupa. So in the external form, there's one eternal spota or meaning that's manifested by the words. And it can be divided, it can be seen in two forms, the vyakti spota and the jati spota. Now I think what that means is the meaning of one sentence, and the jati spota would mean the meaning of a whole, like you were saying, a whole composition made of many sentences. That also has a spota. So there is two different levels. There's the individual spota of the individual sentences, and then the whole purport or whatever of a whole passage. That's another kind of spota. Then we can distinguish those as Vyakti spota, individual spota, and jati spota, collective spota. Okay. Now that's all that, you know, Vishwanath analyzes a bit, but they don't get into it too much more. He just says that this is that the validity of this theory is actually supported by Mamata in his Kavya Prakash. He says, he uses the phrase buddhair vikaranai, that this spotavad was presented by the intelligent grammarians. He didn't say, Mamata didn't say this is a stupid theory. He said it's an intelligent theory. So Mamata agrees to it, you know, the validity of the spotavad, and it seems that Kavikarna Pradas too, which is curious because Jiva Goswami in the Sarvasambhavani rejected it. Argued against the Spotavad, and it seems like Kavi Kornapur is arguing in favor of it. Well, he says, there that theory others can't tolerate. Others. He didn't say, I don't tolerate. He says, there's other people who can't tolerate it, and they have their arguments against it. But now Kavi Kornapur is going to hear out their arguments and put them aside and stick with the Spotavad. Okay. What the others say. that you can explain things otherwise without resorting to an idea of Spota. You can just explain that you experience phonemes, varnas, one after another. And at the time that you hear the last phoneme in a sentence, there are residues in your mind left behind from your experience of each of the phonemes. They leave some impression in your mind. And that, together with the last varna, generate a perception of the meaning of the word, which encompasses all the phonemes in the word, the ones that are present and the ones that are past. In fact, they're all past by now. And simultaneously, at the appropriate time, you grasp the meaning of the whole word. It's okay that the phonemes are gone. You can remember them. And that remembrance is a valid evidence that leads to your understanding of what the word, the meaning of the word that they all make together. So you don't need some separate potency of Spota. You just use the potency of each of the phonemes, put them together, and you get the word. This is the counter theory. It's just like they say, the act of recollection. Recollection, this is discussed in the Nyaya philosophy by Gotama and his commentators, that real jnana, awareness, or prama, is valid knowledge, but it doesn't include dreams and remembrances because they're not reliable. They can't be called pralat. They might be right, but they might be wrong. Now, pratyabhigya is a special kind of remembrance where you're recollecting something you saw or perceived before, and you're remembering it in the mind. That's called pratyabhigya. The thing you're remembering isn't there anymore. Pratyaksha, normal direct perception, is of something that's there. There has to be an actual contact between the sense and the object to have pratyaksha. This is an extension, a kind of pratyaksha, but the object is not present anymore. The mind is coming into contact with something that some sense perceived in the past, but it's not there anymore. But it's in its own way valid. Like that, the same kind of process happens in the perception of the meanings of all the potencies of all the phonemes coming together to give you the meaning of the word. Even though they're not there anymore, you're recollecting them in your mind. Okay. Well, this is rejected. I don't know if for a couple of reasons. One is that actually pratyabhigya is not really a proper kind of pratyaksha, and it's not a simple act of knowing, of awareness. Because what you saw is in the past, and what you're thinking about it, your remembrance of it, is in the present. Those are two different perceptions. You put the two together and you have recollection. But recollection itself is not a single, it's a compound of a past and a present experience. So it's not really a proper experience. It's just an amalgamation of two experiences that may properly fit together and may not. It's not reliable because you may be making a mistake. I saw a pile of gold coins once, and then yesterday, I saw a big mountain. So that night, I may dream about a gold mountain, but there's no such thing. So my recollection of a gold mountain is a mistake because I've put together two different experiences that don't actually go together, the experience of the mountain and the experience of the gold. So it's erroneous. So recollection is not reliable because it's putting together artificially two, a past and a present experience, which may not correctly go together. It may be invalid. So the same way, we can't reliably know the meaning of words just by remembering sounds that aren't there anymore. So that's one argument. Anyway, the author is insisting there is spota. It does exist as a separate potency, and we have evidence of it. We have the evidence of pratyaksha and the evidence of artapati. Artapati is the argument, what do you call it? Contrary to fact argument. If it wasn't like this, it wouldn't be like that. Devadatta is fat, and we know he doesn't eat during the daytime. Nobody sees him eating. Well, we can presume he must be eating when he goes home at night, in private, in his room, he's eating. Because we never see him eating on the outside. That's presumption, called artapati. You can't explain the facts without presuming something to be true. That's artapati. So that artapati also demonstrates, according to Kavi Karnapur here, the existence of spota. First of all, we have perception, our own perception. I lost the page. I'm sorry. Okay, here's the projection. If you hear the sentence, "Ayam go," this is a cow. What are you perceiving? What are you aware of? Are you actually thinking, unless you're studying phonetics, what do you perceive when you hear "ayam go karaha"? Do you hear the syllables "ah-ya"? You hear them, but is that what your attention goes to? Not normally. Your attention goes to the meaning. Here's a cow. You know, here's a bull with big horns, and he's running toward you. So you don't stop and analyze the meaning of the phonemes, or you know, think about the letters. You think about these horns coming right toward you, and you run away. So that's the evidence, the projection evidence of the spota. Because what you think about when you hear a sentence is not the phonemes. You don't think about the phonemes. You think about the spota, the meaning of the sentence. And then that's the projection evidence of the actual existence of spota. Because it's what draws your attention, not the phonemes. And also there is a argument by presumption. There's no other way to derive the meaning of a word from the separate phonemes, not by separating them up or combining them. You can isolate each of the meanings, you know, each of the impressions, the sound of each phoneme. But by themselves, they don't make the meaning of the word. What if you mixed up the phonemes and set them backwards? If just the separate meanings of each word put together created the meaning of the word, then you could do them backwards. You could say the word backwards and get the same meaning, but you can't. Neither is there some process by which you just put them all together and make some combination. There is no such process. So there's nothing else that can explain. There's nothing in the, especially phonemes don't have their own meaning. There's nothing in them that can explain the generation of the meaning of the word, unless you presume this other potency and call it spota. Let's call it spota then. It's got to be something other than the phonemes. It's got to be something that, by the hearing of the phonemes, generates the meaning. It should also be eternal, because the same word is used over and over again. It was spoken, that word was spoken 10,000 years ago. It's going to be spoken 10,000 years in the future. If the meaning is temporary, then after its time wears out, it won't be understood anymore. But the word continues to be understood, and always was and always will be understood. So the meaning should be eternal. So we have to presume spota to fit the bill. Otherwise, there's nothing else that fits that description. That's the Artapati argument. If we don't accept this bodha, then the impressions that each separate phoneme in a word leave in your mind, or each separate word in a sentence, would have nothing to tie them together. They would just be disorganized, chaotic. And they wouldn't be able to, in any systematic fashion, give you the meaning of the word. Okay, I already discussed how what was given as an analogy, the active recollection, is not really a single perception. It's a combination of two perceptions. Okay, so he concludes that we have to, whether we like it or not, we have to accept the concept of spota. This is Kavi Karnapur's opinion. And spota is generated by hearing the phonemes in a word in a particular order. Otherwise, nadi and dina would be synonymous. Or rasa and sara should be synonymous. But it is essential that phonemes be pronounced in a certain order to manifest the intended spota. Okay. Any questions before we stop? That's it for Spota Vada.
Explain again the argument.
Could you see someone talking inside? If they are, ask them not to talk so loud during the class. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
The arguments from Artapati for spota.
Oh, yeah. Well, basically, it's just that we require something that will give us the meaning of the word from each of the phonemes. Let me look at it again.
If you could kindly.
Wait a minute, is that something going on inside? Oh, they're giving their class. Okay, I can't tell them to stop their class. Okay. All right. No, that's okay. That's okay. We're almost done.
If you could also show it, while reading the text, so that.
Okay, tell you what. Can I do it tomorrow?
Okay.
Let me, because I'll fumble right now to get it all right. Uh-huh. Let me look at it and make a coherent presentation of what that Artapati is, but I'll do that first thing tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Remind me if I forgot to do it, but you can ask me to do it, but I should say, first thing in the class will explain that argument for the existence of spota. Do we have what shouldn't we have tomorrow? Tomorrow is just a codicil. I don't think we're canceling anything tomorrow. Okay, so I'm sorry, next day after tomorrow? No, I won't be here. Okay. Give me a minute, let me look at it. This is a little complicated, so I may not get it right away. Yeah, I'm going away for 2 or 3 days, starting day after tomorrow. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to actually sit down in a quiet place and look at it for 10 minutes before I can properly explain it. You can come to me later, and I'll also explain it in the class, the next class we have. Yes, Bart Andrew.
I'm just checking if I got it right, the
Arthapatya argument.
Okay, you want to explain it? Yeah.
He is saying that when we hear a sentence, for example, then we hear the individual words, like yashaha, gokaraha. So then our attention doesn't go to the individual syllables, but it goes to the objects which is it's referring to directly without paying any.
Oh, but that's the argument from Pratyaksha. That's our experience. We have experience that what we pay attention to, what our mind is drawn to, is the meaning, not the phonemes or not the words. So that's the evidence of Pratyaksha. Then there's a different evidence from Arthapatti.
Isn't there a connection to this in Arthapatti also? Because if Sphota was not there, then if each Shabda was revealing something, then the attention would have gone to the Shabdas. So,
well, the thing is, the Shabdas do, especially in a sentence, words do have separate meanings. They do have separate meanings, because that's the Shabda, that's the pada Sphota is there. Except if you're thinking in mystic terms, phonemes don't have individual meanings, but words do. So there is something there, and we could be thinking about the meaning of the words, especially if you don't know the language, then you got a puzzle over the words. But normally you don't.
Not the, I mean the each syllable.
Each syllable of the word. Okay. Yeah. Well. Okay. You don't think about the meaning, but you do think of the identity. This is a T and this is a B. You know, you do recognize which phoneme you're dealing with, each phoneme. If you didn't, then you couldn't recognize the word. You have to be able to, you, in some way, you're identifying the individual phonemes. Someone couldn't get away with substituting a B for a T. You know, your mind knows the difference because you don't recognize the same word if someone switches a phoneme on you.
Yeah, you recognize, but the intended meaning of the word is not known just by hearing one syllable. So when we hear the word, then the object is suddenly made known. So
right, but the controversy is what's making it known? Is it some separate potency, the spota, or is it just the potency of those phonemes that somehow can work together to give you the meaning of the word? Those are the two opposing theories. And we're trying to defend the Spotavad against the opposing theory, which doesn't deny that something happens, but they say that this process of giving you the meaning of the word doesn't require a separate potency. And we're arguing that we do need that a separate potency is there.
Okay.
You know, anyway, it's there. I mean, I just... Because I prepared for this 3 days ago, therefore I didn't remember everything that I studied 3 days ago. So I have to go back and just see exactly what Kaveri Karnapur said that I can explain to you later. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Sri Kaveri Karnapur ki jai.